You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. At the top of author Stephanie Land's website are these words, unflinching writing about poverty and motherhood. These are topics deeply personal to her. As a single mom in her 20s, her childhood dream of attending college seemed far from reach. She and her young daughter found themselves living in a homeless shelter in Port Townsend, Washington. It's where her daughter took her first steps as a toddler. And to make ends meet, Stephanie started cleaning houses through an agency. Her experience of working low-paying jobs, supplemented by federal assistance programs, is documented in her much-heralded memoir called Made. This book is a New York Times bestseller, and she's also been featured on NPR's Fresh Air. Stephanie Land will be speaking at Boise State University Friday, October 11th, and she's been kind enough to join us by Skype to talk about her story. Stephanie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's go back to those houses in Washington State. All right, let's start there. And how much money were you making per month?
It varied pretty drastically per month because my schedule was really varied. And, you know, if my daughter was sick or I was sick or a client canceled, I would lose quite a bit of hours. But I think I usually came in under $1,000 a month.
Wow. So for people who have never had to work to survive, like you did, and here you have a young daughter that you're having to support. So this isn't just about you, or maybe who are decades apart from you know, that low wage hourly work. What do you want people to know about that working poor life?
Well, I think it's a constant struggle. And the American way of looking at things is you work hard, play hard. And so you work really hard and then you deserve, you know, a beer at the end of the day or to sit down or something like that. And for me, it was constant hard work and no relief. And not only that, it wasn't enough to pay the bills most months. And so I had to do this shuffling process or go without buying toothpaste for a couple of weeks and just kind of like figure it out. And so it felt like a constant failure on my part in not only taking care of myself. I mean, I wasn't even really on the radar, but providing my daughter with the livelihood that I wanted for her was just not happening.
And what about, you know, the stigma that is around the working poor? I mean, as much as we want to think that, you know, everyone is equal, no matter their station in life, that's just a fallacy. Did you experience that?
Well, yeah, a lot of the government assistance programs are very hard to, figure out and then to manage and then to use. There were a lot of times in the grocery store where cashiers were rude to me or people in line behind me were rude to me because I was using these big paper checks to purchase milk with. And, you know, there were a lot of assumptions made just based on me using food stamps. And then, you know, when you go onto the internet or onto Facebook and you see what people really think about people who are poor and on government assistance. And the growing stigma has always been, you know, since Reagan started the myth of the welfare queen, was that we're taking advantage and we're kind of leeching off the system instead of working, when the fact is that we're working extremely hard.
Right. And the system is set in place to actually try to help you. And in fact, I mean, as you said, you receive federal assistance through SNAP, Medicaid, and other programs. But here's what some people may not fully understand, is that these programs have limits to how much you can actually make before you lose benefits. And so this is called that so-called welfare cliff. So describe that, because here you say, you know, some months you were lucky to make $1,000. But I mean, how did that play into, if I make X, I might lose these benefits for myself and my daughter?
Yeah, and I was definitely mindful of that, because there was one month where I had a recertification and I made, you know, $50 more, and suddenly I had a $50 copay for my childcare grant. So all of that extra income was soaked up by suddenly I had reached this limit of income and gone a little bit over. Mm-hmm. And you know, the welfare cliff is, there was one study that I saw where a single mom with one child making $10 an hour would have to leap to an income of $33 an hour to make up for the government assistance that she is receiving through food and childcare, free lunches for her kid at school, and, you know, any other assistance that she's receiving. And it's extremely hard to completely get off government assistance. I mean, I wasn't off of food stamps until the beginning of 2016. And there were many months after that, that I was hungry. Mm-hmm. And just didn't want to reapply because I didn't want to go through it again.
Well, and there's a theme here, right? When you've talked about government assistance, you know, you've used the pronoun she many times. That is because so many people who are on government assistance with their children are single moms.
That is true. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't have any statistics fresh in my head, but
right.
The majority of single parent households are run by women.
So as a mom, what was your mental and your physical state like when you were trying to take care of your daughter, but you were living, you know, as you said, I mean, where you didn't know how much was coming in a month and trying to balance so that you didn't fall off this welfare cliff. I mean, what gave you hope to continue and know that maybe there was, you know, a different path on the other side of this obstacle?
I think there was a lot of privilege in that. I mean, I am a white person who had not only access to an education, but believed that I could accomplish in getting a degree, and that the life that I was living, I did not see that as my end existence. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of privilege involved in that. But I also had days where, you know, I called it like a crushing sense of hopelessness. Like, and I just kind of lived in this state where I didn't think we were going to get out of it. And, you know, especially in the years after the book ends, I mean, I'm going rapidly into debt for a college education, still struggling on food stamps, and feeling incredibly guilty and selfish for getting a college education, mm-hmm. because it was costing me, you know, possibly buying a house someday and costing my kids a college education. And so I felt like even though I was trying so hard to improve our lives, it was still setting us very far mm-hmm. back. And that is, it's not a great place to live in day to day, especially when you're so tired. And I had a lot of issues with panic attacks and anxiety and couldn't afford mental health care or mental health care that was good.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Or, you know, I have a really good therapist now and it's been a life-changing thing. And I wish that would have been available to me when I really, really needed it.
We're speaking with Stephanie Land. She's the author of the memoir Made, and she will be in Boise on Friday. I want to go back, Stephanie, to these homes that you clean, because you saw a very intimate side of people's lives while you were working as a maid. And some of these people were quite wealthy. So what was it like to clean these people's homes, to see this intimate, sometimes kind of disgusting part of their lives, frankly? And yet here you would go back to living in a shelter or needing housing assistance.
Yeah, it was hard to not have this huge chip on my shoulder the whole entire time that I was cleaning, or to be resentful, or, you know, for me, it was, I separated the work into grids and just focused on this one spot of countertop that I needed to clean. And then I would move on to the next one. One, so I didn't get completely overwhelmed by the job. And then two, so I didn't really think about the differences. Mm-hmm. I think during that time, that I've actually been trying to go back to this practice, I would focus on 10 or 15 minutes a day. Sometimes it was 5 minutes a day where it was, just something really great that happened. And I would absorb that. And some days it was like Mia fell asleep in the car on the way to the grocery store and I could take a little nap before we went into the store. And that was like my, but at least I got that nap today.
Right.
Like, and so I think in getting to know these houses, there was some intellectual side of it as like figuring out this puzzle of who this person was. And, but there was also trying to stay kind of distant, mm-hmm. From really thinking about how different our lives were and really just trying to see them as human beings. And before that, I didn't really see upper middle class or upper class people as human beings. To me, they were kind of superhuman, you know, because they could afford all the things that I couldn't afford to keep them healthy, like yoga and all of that.
Right.
And like, so I thought like, well, these people must, they must be like
incredibly
so different
fit from you, right?
And, yeah. And so it was surprising to me when they were obviously sick with something, like there were a lot of tissues, or when they had prescriptions laying around on the counters. And for me, that I couldn't believe it. I'm like, well, how can they be dealing with chronic pain when they can go to the doctor? And so there was also this like disenchantment process happening. And I think in the end, it just, I felt kind of more equal to them. And even though we were living in this, you know, one room apartment, essentially, we had a very good life together. My daughter and I did, because we had each other and we could do all these things together and we didn't have distractions of, huge TVs and game rooms and all of that.
Yeah. So you end up going to the University of Montana because you always had this dream to be a writer. And while you were in school, you actually freelanced and you wrote about your experiences for publications like The Guardian and The Washington Post. And when you were writing these early pieces, is that kind of where you started formulating the manuscript for Made? Or how did that come about?
Well, the book came about, it was a essay that I wrote for a writing workshop in college, and I didn't submit it to any publications until I think a year after I graduated, and it was just to a slush pile at Vox.com, and they emailed me back immediately, and they offered me like $500 to publish this essay, and I thought that was going to be the most money that I would ever see ever at one time as a freelance writer, And the essay just went very, very viral. And my my now agent contacted me that morning and he asked me if I had a book in the works. And I totally lied to him and I said yes. And,
of course I did.
And 11 months later, we had we sold the memoir on proposal and then I had a year to write it.
And here you are now, a working writer, I mean, making this your profession. But even when you were writing that book over that year, I mean, what did life look like? Because as you said, I mean, you had loans from going to college. Writing is notoriously not a, you know, lucrative profession. You know, what did all of that look like?
Well, I mean, we were still living in low-income housing. It was not as much of a struggle. Because when you sell a book on proposal, you get some money to live off of while you're writing it. Mm-hmm. So I was able to quit my day job as a freelance writer and just focus on the book. But it's hard writing a book. So, I mean, it was still a lot of work. But our life had changed to the point where I didn't have to worry about purchasing food or... Right. Clothes or, you know, things like that.
I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about your experience and your memoir. You will be giving a free talk at Boise State this Friday, October 11th at 10:30. Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
We've been talking with Stephanie Land. She is the author of the memoir, Made. This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette.